Chapter 4. But none of the bodies afforded a man opportunity for the display of this charitable intention. Not a muscle twitched amongst them, not even the powerful muscles of Gasparus, who, deluged with the blood of his neighbors and shamming death, strove to appear more lifeless than the others. He was lying face down. The sergeant recognized him by his stature, and being himself a very small man, looked with envy and contempt at the prostration of so much strength. He had always disliked that particular soldier. Moved by an obscure animosity, he inflicted a long gash across the neck of Gasparus, with some vague notion of making sure of that strong man's death, as if a powerful physique were more able to resist the bullets. For the sergeant had no doubt that Gasparus had been shot through in many places. Then he passed on, and shortly afterwards marched off with his men, leaving the bodies to the care of crows and vultures. Gasparus had restrained a cry, though it had seemed to him that his head was cut off at a blow, and when darkness came, shaking off the dead, whose weight had oppressed him, he crawled away over the plain on his hands and knees. After drinking deeply, like a wounded beast, at a shallow stream, he assumed an upright posture, and staggered on light-headed and aimless, as if lost amongst the stars of the clear night. A small house seemed to rise out of the ground before him. He stumbled into the porch, and struck at the door with his fist. There was not a gleam of light. Gasparus might have thought that the inhabitants had fled from it, as from many others, in the neighborhood, had it not been for the shouts of abuse that answered his thumping. In his feverish and enfeebled state, the angry screaming seemed to him part of a hallucination belonging to the weird dreamlike feeling of his unexpected condemnation to death, of the thirst suffered, of the volleys fired at him within 15 paces, of his head being cut off at a blow. "Oh, open the door," he cried. "Oh, open in the name of God." An infuriated voice from within jeered at him. "Come in, come in. This house belongs to you. All this land belongs to you. Come and take it." "For the love of God," Gasparus murmured. "Does not all the land belong to you, patriots?" the voice on the other side of the door screamed on. "Are you not a patriot?" Gasparus did not know. I am a wounded man," he said, apathetically. All became still inside. Gasparus lost the hope of being admitted, and lay down under the porch just outside the door. He was utterly careless of what was going to happen to him. All his consciousness seemed to be concentrated in his neck, where he felt a severe pain. His indifference as to his fate was genuine. The day was breaking when he awoke from a feverish doze. The door at which he had knocked in the dark stood wide open now, and a girl, steadying herself with her outspread arms, leaned over the threshold. Lying on his back, he stared up at her. Her face was pale and her eyes were very dark. Her hair hung down black as ebony against her white cheeks. Her lips were full and red. Beyond her he saw another head with long gray hair, and a thin old face with a pair of anxiously clasped hands under the chin. "Why, I knew those people by sight," General Santiero would tell his guests at the dining table. I mean the people with whom Gasparus found shelter. The father was an old Spaniard, a man of property ruined by the revolution. His estates, his house in town, his money, everything he had in the world had been confiscated by proclamation, for he was a bitter foe of our independence. From a position of great dignity and influence on the Viceroy's Council, he became of less importance than his own Negro slaves made free by our glorious revolution. He had not even the means to flee the country, as other Spaniards had managed to do. It may be that, wandering ruined and houseless, unburdened with nothing but his life, which was left to him by the clemency of the provisional government, he had simply walked under that broken roof of old tiles. It was a lonely spot. There did not seem to be even a dog belonging to the place. But though the roof had holes, as if a cannonball or two had dropped through it, the wooden shutters were thick and tight closed all the time. My way took me frequently along the path in front of that miserable rancho. I rode from the fort to the town almost every evening, to sigh at the window of a lady I was in love with then. When one is young, you understand. She was a good patriot, you may believe. Caballeros, credit me or not, political feeling ran so high in those days that I do not believe I could have been fascinated by the charms of a woman of royalist opinions. Murmurs of amused incredulity all round the table interrupted the general, and while they lasted he stroked his white beard gravely. Sinners, he protested, a royalist was a monster to our overwrought feelings. I am telling you this in order not to be suspected of the slightest tenderness towards that old royalist's daughter. Moreover, as you know, my affections were engaged elsewhere. But I could not help noticing her on rare occasions, when with the front door open she stood in the porch. You must know that this old royalist was as crazy as a man can be. His political misfortunes, his total downfall and ruin, had disordered his mind. To show his contempt for what we patriots could do, he affected to laugh at his imprisonment, at the confiscation of his lands, the burning of his houses, and at the misery to which he and his womenfolk were reduced. This habit of laughing had grown upon him, so that he would begin to laugh and shout directly he caught sight of any stranger. That was the form of his madness. I, of course, disregarded the noise of that madman with that feeling of superiority the success of our cause inspired in us Americans. I suppose I really despised him, because he was an old Castilian, a Spaniard born, and a royalist. Those were certainly no reasons to scorn a man, but for centuries Spaniards born had shown their contempt of us Americans, men as well descended as themselves, simply because we were what they called colonists. We had been kept in abasement, and made to feel our inferiority in social intercourse. And now it was our turn. It was safe for us patriots to display the same sentiments, and I, being a young patriot, son of a patriot, despised that old Spaniard, and despising him, I naturally disregarded his abuse, though it was annoying to my feelings. Others perhaps would not have been so forbearing. He would begin with a great L.I.C.A. patriot. Another of them. Long, before I came abreast of the house. The tone of his senseless revilings, mingled with bursts of laughter, was sometimes piercingly shrill and sometimes grave. It was all very mad, but I felt it incumbent upon my dignity to check my horse to a walk without even glancing towards the house, as if that man's abusive clamor in the porch were less than the barking of a cur. Always I rode by preserving an expression of haughty indifference on my face. It was no doubt very dignified, but I should have done better if I had kept my eyes open. A military man in wartime should never consider himself off duty, and especially so if the war is a revolutionary war, when the enemy is not at the door, but within your very house. At such times the heat of passionate convictions passing into hatred removes the restraints of honor and humanity from many men, and of delicacy and fear from some women. These last, when once they throw off the timidity and reserve of their sex, become by the vivacity of their intelligence, and the violence of their merciless resentment more dangerous than so many armed giants. The general's voice rose, but his big hand stroked his white beard twice with an effect of venerable calmness. Sigh, sinners. Women are ready to rise to the heights of devotion unattainable by us men, or to sink into the depths of abasement which amazes our masculine prejudices. I am speaking now of exceptional women, you understand. Here one of the guests observed that he had never met a woman, yet who was not capable of turning out quite exceptional under circumstances that would engage her feelings strongly. That sort of superiority in recklessness they have over us, he concluded, makes of them the more interesting half of mankind. The general, who bore the interruption with gravity, nodded courteous assent. Sigh. Under circumstances. Precisely. They can do an infinite deal of mischief sometimes in quite unexpected ways. For who could have imagined that a young girl, daughter of a ruined royalist whose life was held only by the contempt of his enemies, would have had the power to bring death and devastation upon two flourishing provinces, and cause serious anxiety to the leaders of the revolution in the very hour of its success? He paused to let the wonder of it penetrate our minds. Death and devastation, somebody murmured in surprise, how shocking. The old general gave a glance in the direction of the murmur and went on. Why yes, that is, war calamity. But the means by which she obtained the power to work this havoc on our southern frontier seem to me, who have seen her and spoken to her, still more shocking. That particular thing left on my mind a dreadful amazement which the further experience of life, of more than 50 years, has done nothing to diminish. He looked round, as if to make sure of our attention, and, in a changed voice, I am, as you know, a Republican, son of a liberator, he declared. M. My incomparable mother, God rest her soul, was a French woman, the daughter of an ardent Republican. As a boy I fought for liberty, I've always believed in the equality of men, and as to their brotherhood, that, to my mind, is even more certain. Look at the fierce animosity they display in their differences. And what in the world, do you know that is more bitterly fierce than brothers' quarrels? All absence of cynicism checked an inclination to smile at this view of human brotherhood. On the contrary, there was in the tone the melancholy natural to a man profoundly humane at heart who from duty, from conviction, and from necessity, had played his part in scenes of ruthless violence. The general had seen much of fratricidal strife. Certainly. There is no doubt of their brotherhood, he insisted. All men are brothers, and as such know almost too much of each other. But and here in the old patriarchal head, white as silver, the black eyes humorously twinkled, if we are all brothers, all the women are not our sisters. One of the younger guests was heard murmuring his satisfaction at the fact. But the general continued, with deliberate earnestness, they are so different. The tale of a king who took a beggar mate for a partner of his throne may be pretty enough as we men look upon ourselves and upon love. But that a young girl, famous for her haughty beauty, and, only a short time before, the admired of all at the balls, in the viceroy's palace, should take by the hand a gasso, a common peasant, is intolerable to our sentiment of women and their love. It is madness. Nevertheless, it happened. But it must be said, that in her case it was the madness of hate, not of love. After presenting this excuse in a spirit of chivalrous justice, the general remained silent for a time. I rode past the house every day almost, he began again, and this was what was going on within. But how it was going on no mind of man can conceive. Her desperation must have been extreme, and Gasparouz was a docile fellow. He had been an obedient soldier. His strength was like an enormous stone lying on the ground, ready to be hurled this way or that by the hand that picks it up. It is clear that he would tell his story to the people who gave him the shelter he needed. And he needed assistance badly. His wound was not dangerous, but his life was forfeited. The old royalist being wrapped up in his laughing madness, the two women arranged a hiding place for the wounded man in one of the huts amongst the fruit trees at the back of the house. That hovel, an abundance of clear water, while the fever was on him, and some words of pity were all they could give. I suppose he had a share of what food there was. And it would be but little. A handful of roasted corn. Perhaps a dish of beans, or a piece of bread with a few figs. To such misery were those proud, and once wealthy people reduced. General Santiero was right in his surmise. Such was the exact nature of the assistance which Gasparouz, peasant son of peasants, received from the royalist family whose daughter had opened the door of their miserable refuge to his extreme distress. Her somber resolution ruled the madness of her father, and the trembling bewilderment of her mother. As he had asked the strange man on the doorstep, "Who wounded you?" The soldiers, Senora, Gasparuza answered, in a faint voice. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.